Lord be with you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Mark. When the Pharisees, with some scribes who had come from Jerusalem, gathered around Jesus, they observed that some of his disciples ate their meals with unclean, that is, unwashed hands. For the Pharisees, and in fact all Jews, do not eat without carefully washing their hands, keeping the tradition of the elders. And on coming from the marketplace, they do not eat without purifying themselves. And there are many other things that they have traditionally observed, the purification of cups and jugs and kettles and beds. So the Pharisees and the scribes questioned him, "Why do your disciples not follow the tradition of the elders, but instead eat a meal with unclean hands?" He responded, "Well did Isaiah prophesy about you hypocrites, as it is written, 'This people honors me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me. In vain do they worship me, teaching as doctrines human precepts.' You disregard God's commandment, but cling to human tradition." He went on to say, "How well you have set aside the commandment of God in order to uphold your tradition. For Moses said, 'Honor your father and your mother, and whoever curses father or mother shall die.' Yet you say, 'If someone says to father or mother, any support you might have had from me is korban, that is, dedicated to God, you allow him to do nothing more for his father or mother.' You nullify the word of God in favor of your tradition that you have handed on, and you do many such things." The Gospel of the Lord. Now, for those of you daily Mass types who go to daily Mass every day, you've noticed that for weeks upon weeks upon weeks, our first reading has been taken from the letter to the Hebrews, and we read through the whole letter to the Hebrews. And if you're very attentive, you know you've changed gears. Now, our first reading comes from the book of Genesis, and we start at the very beginning of the book of Genesis. We hear the creation story, which began with yesterday's first reading. Today's first reading is the conclusion of the creation story, and when you hear the creation story from Genesis, you're tempted to think, that is just a lovely story. God made the heavens and the earth, and God said, "Let there be light," and God said, "Let us separate the light from the darkness and the water from the dry land, and let us make all the creatures of the birds in the sky and the air." And God saw how good it was, and on the seventh day, God rested from all that he's done. And you think to yourself, isn't that just a lovely story, the kind of thing you'd read to a child as he's drifting off to sleep? Well, are you aware that the creation story from the book of Genesis holds dozens of viscerally countercultural, deeply controversial ideas? Are you aware of that? There's dozens of them. This morning, let's just look at three, shall we? Okay. Here's the first countercultural, controversial idea that comes from the creation story of the book of Genesis. And that is that all the universe and all the world and everything in it is a deliberate act of creation by a loving God. And you hear that and you say, yeah. But are you aware how deeply you've ingested the secular world's idea that the universe and the world and all that's in it is not a deliberate act of creation by a personal loving God? The whole thing is a great big chemical interstellar accident. Now, don't get me wrong. Please don't get me wrong. We don't deny science, not in the slightest. We believe that truths we can learn from empirical science can tell us a lot of truths about how God is and how he orders the universe. Personally, I myself was pre-med. I studied physical chemistry and organic chemistry and physics and all the rest. I know about accretion disks and nuclear fusion and all these things. We're not denying science, but are you aware that you'd be denying your faith if you thought that the world around you was a great big chemical accident, that life itself evolved by chance. You might have heard this before, but the leading secular world theory about where life came from is that amino acids were hanging out by deep sea hydrothermal vents when they spontaneously replicated and just, you know, like kind of became alive. Just as an aside, don't trust anybody who thinks that his existence is a consequence of a chemical accident of a deep sea hydrothermal vent. Because if he thinks that about himself, imagine what he thinks about you, okay? But we believe that we are the deliberate creation of a loving and personal God. God loved you into existence. And it's very important to understand that we understand human dignity and our purpose in this world. That's the first idea. Here's the second. Second countercultural controversial idea. Man is the summit of all creation. We believe that this world and this universe and everything that's in it was made for us. God said to Adam and Eve, have dominion over the fish of the sea, the birds of the air, the living things that move on the earth. Have dominion over all the plants and all the animals. The plants and the animals, green plants for food and all that crawls on the ground. Have dominion. Now don't misunderstand. Dominion is not ownership. You might think that it's some sort of liberal idea to say that we have a responsibility to care for the environment, but it's not a liberal idea. It's a biblical idea. Because this world and all that's in it, while it's given to our stewardship, is not given to us as our possession. Almost like your life. Your life is not your own. It's God's. God gave it. God's going to take it back. You have stewardship over it, not ownership. And when you come to the end of it, of your life, God's going to say, what did you do with what I gave you? And in a similar sense, we don't mistreat the created world around us. But we do know this. It was the whole universe and everything that was in it was made for us. It reflects the glory of God. And by the way, just as an aside, this explains why empirical science arose out of Western society and not out of Eastern society. Because the idea that man is the summit of all creation is an idea unique to the God of the Hebrews, unique in all the world. You go around to all the other religions in the world, and if they have any kind of creation story at all, you'll discover that they believe that creation itself is sacred, that creation itself is to be worshipped. And here's where you find people worshipping the God and, you know, worshipping the sun and worshipping the moon and worshipping fire. Of course, we don't believe that creation itself is sacred. It reflects God's beauty, but it's not God. That's why we can study it, experiment on it, learn from it, while we care for it and develop it, and the continuation of God's own act of creation. It's because of that that empirical science arose out of the West. We understood that creation was intelligible because it was made by God, but it was less than God, therefore we could experiment with it. Absolutely baffling, for example, to Mesoamerican cultures when they were making the Transcontinental Railroad back in the 1860s. In Northern California, they were blasting through mountains to make tunnels, and they were cutting down paths through the forest to build railroad track. And to the Miwok and the Shasta Indians, it was blasphemy, right? Creation was sacred. We don't believe that. But man is the summit of all creation. And that's a very countercultural idea. Here's number three. Number three countercultural idea is that God made them male and female. Now, as recently as 10 years ago, I could have stood at a pulpit and said, there are only two genders, male and female. God made them such. And people would have said, yep, yep, and squares are squares, and circles are round. So what? And it just goes to show how crazy things have gotten in about the last 10 years. And by the way, do you know what a good working definition of insanity is? A good working definition of insanity is to be out of touch with reality. And one of the most basic realities of the world is that men and women are different. Now, physically speaking, you'll get a secularist who will tell you, yeah, of course they're different, but the difference is only biology. And by the way, the difference is biology. Every cell in your body, no matter what you think in your head, tells that you are male or female, and nothing can ever change that, right? no matter what you think in the privacy of your mind and your own thoughts. But we believe that the difference is spiritual. If you think that a man and a woman are only different in the level of their body, I suppose there's no reason why you couldn't believe they could have some kind of operation and change their mind and man could become a woman or woman could become a man, but we don't believe that. In the divine image God created them, male and female, he created them. And that men and women are different at the level of their spirit. And that's why we'll never understand each other, ever. A man represents something of who God is, and a woman represents something of who God is, but spiritually speaking, we're distinct creations, equal in dignity. But don't misunderstand that equality. A lot of people think that equality means interchangeability, as if men and women are just as interchangeable as two sheets of loose leaf paper. Equality does not mean interchangeability. There's a beautiful complementarity that God made between a man and a woman. Physical complementarity, emotional complementarity, spiritual complementarity. People will say, but you know, a woman's value is that she can do everything that a man can do. Got news for you. A woman's value is not that she can do everything that a man can do. A woman's value is that she's made in God's image. A woman's value is not that she can do everything that a man can do, but that she can do everything that a man can't do. That's what we need. And by the way, this is foundational to our understanding of marriage. If you don't believe that men and women are spiritually different and complementary, then I suppose there's no reason why two men can't get married or two women can't get married. Or why limited at two for that matter? Three, four, or five, any group you want, plural marriage, why not? But the idea that a man and woman are made for each other, physically, emotionally, spiritually, and that when they come together, they form an inseparable, exclusive union that's open to life, this is the foundation of what we understand about marriage. It's highly controversial and highly countercultural. And that's why the differences between men and women are not to be minimized. They're to be maximized. They're good. God made them, and we need them. Back in the French Revolution, 1780s, 1790s, radical Jacobins standing up in the National Assembly, shouting off revolutionary idea after revolutionary idea. One of them stood up in the National Assembly in the French Revolution, and he said, "There's no difference between a man and a woman." To which the National Assembly thundered back, "Vive la différence." And that's what we need more of in our own time. And you thought the creation story was just lovely bedtime reading for a small child, right? Idea after idea after idea. And the greatest idea of all is that man reflects the divine image. It's our dignity and it's our responsibility. May we reflect that divine image more and more in all that we say and do. And ask for the prayers of the saints to help us today. Our Lady of Lourdes, pray for us.